Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and our guest today will be sharing some insider trade secrets for saving money on gardening. Carrie Ann Mendez back with us. She's an expert gardener, author, a national speaker, host of interactive webinars. And Carrie owns Perennially Yours. It's a landscaping company that focuses on the art of low-maintenance perennial gardening. And her new book is called The Budget-Wise Gardener, so we'll look at great sources for plants, how to save money on garden design and maintenance, and, of course, we'll take your flower gardening questions. What's your best find? How do you save money when you garden? And what questions do you have for Carrie? Join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email at ideas@wpr.org, or you can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carrie Ann Mendez, welcome. Good to have you back.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here with you. Well, actually not there. I'm in Maine, but I love it. I love being on your show. It was a lot of fun last time.
Well, Carrie, you've written a number of gardening books. Why did you want to talk about budget-friendly gardening? You know, why do you want to do that?
Well, because we all want to save money so we can buy more plants. So, you know, it's one of these, yeah, I love getting a deal, and I don't care what I'm shopping for, but I love the feeling of getting a deal, getting better value for the price I'm paying, or, hey, even better, getting it for free. And I said, you know what? I've been in this industry for so many years, both working at family-owned garden centers and running my own business. You just start to learn some of the insider tricks of how to be smarter about the plant choices we're making and even how we're designing. And as I talk about container design and the use of different containers, I said, you know, why can't I share these? Of course I can share these ideas. We all love to feel successful as a gardener and putting more money back into our own wallets, while I always say being good stewards of the planet as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, how can you tell? Well, let's go back to even further here for a minute. What are some of your favorite ways to save money?
Well, if I start with just plants, I mean, I divided the book into many different plant groups, yeah, from perennials, ornamentals, grasses, and all that. But, you know, I support family-owned garden centers. And so when I'm out there shopping at garden centers, I think many of us, where do we go first? Well, where?
Yeah.
We go to the clearance table, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things I do is, part of this is just discipline, and I know that, having worked and still working at garden centers, many of the plants that we move to clearance are simply plants that have already gone by their peak season of bloom, and because they don't sell at the same pace, we're going to scoot them over to the clearance table, mark them down by, 50% or whatever, so that we can bring in new product that is in bloom. So if we could just use a little discipline and wait for those spring bloomers to have gone by and then move over to clearance, we can have those great blooms next year for half the price. So I'm always kind of scooting over to see what has been recently moved across into clearance. And I think that's...
like that idea.
Oh, my gosh. It's just kind of restraining ourselves, knowing that when we see that plant, unless you know there's only a few left on the bench, then, of course, buy it. You know, don't walk past this one. But that's one of the ways I do it. Another way I get so many great deals, especially on perennials, is that many times perennials, especially if they have flashy, colorful foliage, are also potted up in smaller containers in the annuals section. You know, so they're sold in annuals as a lot of times just as a foliage accent to a container,
yeah,
such as coral bells, lamium. And so you can buy the exact same plant in a smaller pot for, say, $4.99 versus going over to my perennial section and buying it in a gallon pot for $14.99, and it's the same plant. You see what I mean? I'm like, hey, go over there. I'm sorry. I mean, but you see, I mean, there's so many things. I'm like, gosh, I wish I could share more of these things with people and just how to buy smarter when you're picking out plants.
You know, I'm with you. I like to go to the garden centers, and we have several in near where I live in Madison, and so I try to shop at all of them at one time or another. I'm always drawn to the large plants versus the small ones.
Right.
sometimes it's got to make more sense to go small.
It does. Now, I always say, especially when you're doing mail order, when we're talking about smaller plants that don't compare to some of the larger container-ready sizes you can get on retail, but the smaller plants are also going to take a little bit more of our time to nurture them because they don't have the same established root system. So they're going to need a little bit more consistent watering and a little bit more hand-holding to get them moving along versus a larger plant in a bigger pot that has a much better established root system. So there's pluses and minuses as far as, you know, big plant, small plant. A lot of times what I do with the big plants, and this is another thing I do all the time, is I look for some larger size specimens in, say, a gallon pot or a 2-gallon, and then I just bring it home and I divide it into 3 or 4 plants. I just get out my big carving knife and cut through it and do my divisions. You see what I'm doing? And now I've got 4 plants that I have saved a whole bunch on versus if I had bought them in individual pots. So I'm dividing larger container plants many times into halves or to 4s. Pieces.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have questions or comments, or maybe you've got an experience to share about how you save money, or maybe you just have a plant question, call in at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. Sometimes you'll go in and you'll see plants that are root bound.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is, as you say, that's usually happening later in the season as we've been holding these pots and those little roots are, you know, bored and they're going and they're starting to fill in that pot and swirl and circle the pot. So I will still purchase those. Usually I'll wait. You know, those are ones that are usually later in the season and they're probably going to get marked down at some point anyway. But when I bring them home, I'm going to try to get them out of the pot. Sometimes they're so tough you can't even slip the root ball out of the pot. So you kind of got to bang the side of the pot to loosen up the plant and then get it to come out. And then I take a sharp knife. I sound so, you know, aggressive here. I take a knife and I cut the bottom of the plant. I just turn it upside down, the root ball, and I make a big X in the bottom of the pot, of the potting medium, about a third of the depth of that root ball. Kind of pry open the X so that now I've allowed a space for fresh soil to get up within that dense root system.
Oh.
So that when I plant it, now you're kind of saying, okay, boys and girls, and the roots that are all dense, time to spread out. You can't just keep circling in among yourself. And I'll also use either pruners or my hands to scratch up the sides of the root ball once again to try to get roots to stop being so tight together and to start saying, okay, spread outwards, not inwards. So, yeah, I guess the root ball gets quite a little beating before it goes in. I mean, a nice one, but that triggers that plant to realize to set new roots out into fresh soil versus just staying in a dense clump and eventually, you know, starving itself to death because it's never going out for fresh nutrients or water.
Oh, interesting. If you put a plant like that in just a larger pot and just put soil around the outside, you're not going to have as good a luck, I don't imagine. Or will you?
Well, you should still rough up the root ball so it knows, you know, change of state, so to speak, you know, starting to encourage it to move out into even the fresh soil in a larger container.
Hedda in Mercer, Wisconsin, has a question or comment. Let's go there. Okay. Hi, Hedda. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Hello, Mike. Good morning.
My comment for free plants is to join a garden club because we're always exchanging and you're always dividing. And we also have a plant sale every year where we sell from our own gardens and people that don't, you know, that can come and buy plants that are cheaper, that are hardy for the area.
Yeah.
But among ourselves, there's a lot of free trade going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's absolutely garden clubs, master gardener groups. I talk about that in the book, about all these other sources for free plants, and I'm so glad you brought that up with joining different organizations that are, you know, doing the swaps. There's swaps available online. I give in the book as far as places that do free swaps online for plants that you can go to. No, that's Heather, a wonderful point, wonderful point. And you know another one, talking about free, and it's becoming really popular in many cities now and slowly sprawling out to other regions, are the free seed libraries, free seed banks and libraries. Have you seen those?
Yes.
Yeah. So you go in and you check out whatever. It could be edible seed, perennials, trees, whatever. So you check out the seeds that you want from the library, the seed library, and then your job, so to speak, is at the end of the season to return some of the harvested seeds from your crops back to the seed bank to share with other people.
I think that's another great way for free. Yeah,
stuff.
I think that's a great idea. Heather, thank you so much for...
Thank you, Heather.
Appreciate your call. You know, Catherine has emailed us a little different question here. She's planning to build new raised beds for her organic garden. Oh, in this case, it's a vegetable garden, but she's planning to use 2x12 cedar and put hardware cloth on the bottom to keep rodents out.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a good plan?
Yeah.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the rodents are so, so that absolutely makes sense to put that hardware cloth down. And the other thing I do, if it's an area that's got a lot of root competition from trees and shrubs, and those roots are going to find their way up into a nice mixed organic topsoil, I also put a landscape fabric down to try to keep the roots from coming up into my soil medium, because they will. They're going to, you know, those surface roots are going to find their way up, and then you're going to have competition with the edibles in the raised bed. So I also a lot of times use a landscape cloth as well, to be able to prevent roots from invading my space.
Yeah, makes good sense. Carrie Ann Mendez, our guest today. She is the author of many gardening books, and we're talking a bit today and zeroing in a little on the Budget-Wise Gardener. That's the title of her latest, Hundreds of Money-Saving Buying and Design Tips for Planting the Best for Less. I'm Larry Mueller. Jason Butler, our on-air producer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at saving on your gardening pleasure this year with our guest, Carrie Ann Mendez, author of The Budget-Wise Gardener. And I tell you what, we're having fun talking with her. You may have some secrets of your own. Maybe you have a question or plant question. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from you. I was reading in your book about hostas and selecting hostas, and as it relates to slugs, that was kind of interesting to me, how to minimize slugs. And you were talking about color in hostas, and then how the leaves are formed a bit.
Yeah. So, again, save money on deer repellents or critter repellents, especially for deer. Just choosing certain hostas is going to minimize the damage. So what you just mentioned, one, blue-leafed hostas tend to be much less bothered by deer. So either solid blue leaves or blue variegated leaves, because the blue is actually caused by a blue wax that sits on top of green leaves. And deer just do not, as well as slugs and snails, don't like to gnaw through that waxy substance. It's not their first choice when they're going to go for hosta. The other thing is to look for hostas that have as much what we refer to as puckering or quilting to their leaves.
Yeah.
Because the more puckering you see, it's indicating the thicker the leaf. And once again, the thicker leaves are not as attractive to deer, slugs, and snails. I mean, that's going to be their last choice, or usually their last choice, when they're gnawing down on our hosta.
Those are great ideas and something I hadn't considered. So I was glad to read about that. I also...
Yeah.
Cone flowers, which I love cone flowers, some aren't so good.
No. There are some.
And not a good buy.
No, and you know what? They're priced so silly sometimes. I mean, some of these new colors or these little pom-pom crested ones that are coming out, and we're, I don't know what you're paying in the Midwest, but in New England area, we could be paying $19.99 for a silly little gallon pot. So my take on it is this, and what I have done, I do a lot of trialing for plants, for breeders, and also to write about plants. And I've always found that in most cases, the cone flowers that do the best, that winter over, that have good branching structure, that have good repeat bloom, are ones that resemble most closely to the native varieties of the cone flowers. So the farther we get from the color of a cone flower, from like the purple cone flower, the standard purpurea, the farther the breeding gets, and now we've got orange-red with crested tops, usually the farther away they resemble the mother plant, the species, if you will, I find the less genetically strong they are. I think we tamper. We have so many steps in the breeding that they get weaker in many cases. And even more importantly, the less they resemble the straight species, usually the less attractive they are to pollinators, who are just not going to recognize that funky-looking flower, even though we buy it because we see something new as a consumer. If we think about it and you actually look at research now, we are finding that the pollinators do not recognize them. There is not the first choice, even though it's technically a cone flower, Echinacea, it is not one that is most beneficial to pollinators. So,
I have spent some money on some of those.
Me too.
And I've regretted it.
Me too. Well,
because they don't come back.
No, I know. There's just, there's some really junky ones. and actually, well, this doesn't directly relate, but talking about junky ones, I also have a section on ordering from mail order companies. You know, what are the good, what are the bad, how to get the deal. And one of the things I encourage readers to do is to, if they're not familiar with a mail order company, I don't care if it's perennials, trees, fruiting shrubs, seeds, to go to the website called The Garden Watchdog. And The Garden Watchdog is a site that is really run by consumers, people like you and I, who are buying things online, and then we're reporting back to the general gardening audience about our experience. Were the plants good, bad, or awful? What about customer service? What about how they were shipped? The Garden Watchdog has over 1,700 different mail order companies listed with comments from consumers who bought their products. You can click in the name of the company you're thinking of buying something from, mail order. It pops up, and you get a summary of positive, negative, and neutral comments, and any other you can see the actual comments by people. So important. And the other thing this website has, they have a changing list of top 30 mail order companies, again, including heirloom seeds to edible, all these different companies. And the top 30 have gotten the best ratings nationally on a consistent basis from gardeners. And those are the ones that, if I'm going to order something, be it native plants, be it heirloom seed, be it great perennials, I'm going to look for one of those companies on the top 30 list.
Yeah, yeah. I had made a note of that when I was reading through your book. I thought, oh, that's interesting. I've got to put, because I didn't know about the Garden Watchdog. So I thought, you got ahead of me there. I was going to ask that question. That's all right, though. Cindy in Antioch, Illinois, let's go to you now. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. My question is regarding a low-maintenance ground cover. Everyone is familiar with this. It's periwinkle. Very easy to grow. I acquired these plants from a neighbor, just dug up plugs, so that was budget-friendly. Yep. And it's been in the established area for about 6 years, and suddenly they're starting to fail. And by fail, I mean that the leaves are turning brown, and it's beneath an evergreen tree, so it gets dappled shade. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if all the needles that have come off of the tree, you know, they keep shedding. Is that too much acid? That is that what's causing my periwinkle to start to die off?
Good question. You can certainly do a soil pH test, either by bringing a sample to an extension office or many garden centers do it, and see if the pH is in low sixes, even high fives are fine for periwinkle, for vinca. Mm-hmm. It's like the fourth or fifth year now, and it's starting to dwindle?
Yes.
Well, the other thing you could do is, you could try to scratch in some or sprinkle in some organic matter like compost and manure, feather it in to try to add naturally an organic fertilizer and also condition the soil. You could try doing that. I've also sometimes to rejuvenate ground covers, I've sprinkled on an organic fertilizer and one for more acid-loving plants would be one like Hollytone, which a lot of people use on the rhododendrons, azaleas, and I'll sprinkle that over there and water it in. So you could check that. The product I use for organic fertilizers, slow release, one is Hollytone, which is by Espoma. And this is usually used for like blueberries, rhodies, hollies, azaleas, mountain laurel. So it not only provides a nutrient base, but also will lower pH if it needs to be lowered. That's why I'm saying you should check your soil pH. If your soil pH doesn't need to be adjusted, lower, the other one I use is Espoma's product called Plant Tone, PLANT-TONE. I use Plant Tone on all of my sun-loving plants. I use it on my edibles. I use it on my roses. I use it on my climbing vines. I really use that multi-purpose organic slow-release fertilizer on most of my plants in my gardens and containers. But I use the Hollytone when I know it's a plant that really wants more acidic conditions.
I want to work that into the soil and then water it in.
Yes. Just scratch it lightly, because those vinca has a very shallow root system. So if anything, you could just sprinkle it over the plants, and then water it in to make sure none of it's sitting on the leaves, because you don't want the fertilizer sitting on the leaves. Just water it in afterwards. That's all you'd have to do.
Well, thank you for those tips. I hope it helps.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. The only other thing I was thinking of is it's under those trees. There may be some competition in terms of water if it's been a dry.
Yeah.
That could create some problems or weaken the plants a little bit to make them susceptible to other things, too.
Right. There could be some disease issues. I know there's, someone out there I'm sure will know this answer, but I know there is one type of, I think it's a fungal disease that will attack vinca and have a brownout and patches in it, but I'm sorry I can't name that or the cure for that, but I think there is something that will do that and take out patches of vinca.
We can check on that with the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic here at UW.
Yeah.
Brian Huddleston will probably have some good information on that.
Yeah, I would check that, too, just to see if as an option if that might be going on there.
Let's go to Mark in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Hello. So I have a big maple on maple tree that was cut down. It was pretty big, and then I had the stump ground down, and now I have a great big pile of chips in my yard. I'm wondering if I could use those as mulch or put them in the compost with leaves and leave them to decompose. I don't know what could I do with that.
I personally would move them. Try to compost them with other green products, you know, your brown green. I mean, the fresh ground wood, I wouldn't put down straight on top of your soil because there can be some nitrogen loss as that's decomposing. I would use it instead as an addition to your compost pile and start building it in and adding more greens because that's a brown, if we will. Say it's so simple. So leaves and, you know, grass and you know, weeds that you're weeding out and throwing in into the compost pile, again, the heat and turning, that's how I would use it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good.
It's just
pile, and I want to get rid of it, but that's a good way to use it. Thanks.
All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, it does eat up the nitrogen as it's decaying. Rotting, so good thing. Email from Manny in Milwaukee. He recommended the Seed Library in Wisconsin, the Niederkorn Library in Port Washington. They offer vegetable and flower seeds, going back to that your comment earlier.
Great. Good. More and more around us, especially around Boston, big starting movement. I'm about an hour and a half north of Boston. But it's really starting to take off, and it's so wonderful because it gives a free access to seeds, and many of these libraries also have training simple programs for beginner gardeners to start to understand how to use these, not just in the landscape but also in containers depending on where they're living in a city, if it's a very urban setting.
Yeah. Carrie, before we go back to the phones, I should have asked you this earlier, but talk about how you've got your book organized. That's really a pretty book, along with having a lot of good information in it.
Well, the first chapter, I just wanted to go through probably the 7 most commonly sold plant groups in a garden center or online. And I did make the exception for edibles as well as conifers because I'm not as strong in those areas, so I wanted to talk about where my strength is. So everything from bulbs to perennials to ornamental grasses, flowering shrubs. I went through all these different groups about how to figure out what's a good buy, what's not, and even specific type of species that are better within certain groups. Then the second chapter, after I hopefully educated people on how to spot and identify good plants and know what you want to buy, then the second chapter is, okay, where are you going to buy it? Where are you going to go for these great plants now that you have the tools to be a shrewd plant hunter? So I went through everything from buying online, garden centers, different ways to either, as we said, garden clubs, master gardener sales, all these different resources, including, I just did this at a the other day. Sorry, I'm going on a tangent, but flower and garden shows. You can get so many deals at the end of a flower and garden show. More and more shows now are putting up big banners right as you go into the garden display area, letting people know to show up the last day of the show towards the end of the afternoon, and many of these display areas with these nurseries, as they're breaking down, they're selling their plants at ridiculous prices.
Yeah.
Because it's cheaper to sell them and then loading them back on the truck, unload them again at the nursery. So I get so many great deals at garden centers at the end of the shows. But that second chapter goes through all these different things, from swaps to your local ag, Department of Agricultural departments that are also growing a lot of natives that are so cheap. And then the third chapter, I talk about 5 different design ideas that not only saves money because you don't have to buy as many plants, but provides much more color season after season, and very importantly, is eco-friendly, pollinator-friendly for our pollinators. So 5 design themes. And then I close with the 4th chapter, which is all about container gardening, which is trending so much because the 2 largest age populations in the United States, many people think baby boomers are one. We're not. We've been passed by millennials. So millennials are the largest age population in our country. And millennials, as we're tracking what they're doing, their lifestyle choices, they are choosing to live in more urban settings. The urban sprawl. Here's my son in New York City now. Grew up in the southern Adirondacks, and he's in New York, and he's going to San Francisco for another job. So why I'm saying that is these people need to do a lot of their work in containers. They don't have the same settings that I grew up in. They're dealing more in an urban setting. So containers are now, we can talk more about it. I know we have to take a break in a second, I think. But there has been a revolution in containers as far as the quality, the lightness, the ability to be left out year-round so we're not scurrying them inside somewhere in the winter, and for the incredibly new technology with the self-watering systems that's releasing us from daily and even weekly rewatering of these containers.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's incredible.
Well, let's take another call. Jane in Viroqua has something for us. Let's go there. Jane, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Jane.
I'm wondering if I need to be rotating my flower beds as well as my vegetable beds, if there's any benefit in that, and if so, what the groupings are.
So I'm sorry, I'm trying to, so you're thinking about rotating the plantings in your perennial, your ornamental beds and your edible gardens and any?
I rotate my edibles.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, should flowers be rotated too, annuals?
Right, good question. I personally don't rotate my perennials and my shrubs and my ground covers. They're there for years, God willing. If I've sited them in the right light, in the right soil conditions, and obviously in the right zone, so I'm gardening in my zone, my hope is that plant is going to be in that spot year after year after year. If it's a peony, it'll probably be there after I pass on. I mean, so I'm not moving them around.
Annuals?
Annuals will be different. But for a long live, where I'm just going to want to have long live plants sit, I'm not rotating those. As far as annuals, I don't know. I've never had problems. I guess I'm always trying new things, so that's not fair to say. I'm always moving things as I try the next round of annuals, looking for drought tolerant, no deadheading, pollinator friendly. I'm always bringing in all different groups. So maybe I'm not the best person to answer that question.
Well, and sometimes, you know, that tree that you planted that was only 6 feet tall when you planted it is now 15 feet tall, and it's shading out part of your annual bed, perhaps.
Yes.
Might be a reason.
You're absolutely right. I should have, you know, changing, oh, your trees go down, you know, you get damage, or a person builds right next to you with a very tall building or puts up a tall fence, and now it's totally affected the light on your side of the property. Yeah, so changes in the environment that would have an impact on light and air circulation to that space, certainly, yeah, you are going to have to make some tweaks to what's planted there, yeah.
But otherwise, if the conditions stay the same, I would leave it the way it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Jane, for calling. And let's go to Annie in Utica, Wisconsin. Hi, Annie.
Hi, this is Arnie in Utica.
Oh, Arnie. Sorry, Arnie.
Hi, Arnie.
Oh, hi. You guys have a great program. Hey, I'm so excited. I just bought I'm going to butcher the name of it. It's an Amaryllis cognac.
Cognac.
I bought a bulb that's about 5 inch in diameter. It looks like one of those curling stones right now this time of year. And I bought it from a gentleman that said that in the next month or so, you can just set it on your table in 50-50 shade light, and it's going to grow a pretty good size, and it'll have a beautiful flower, and then it'll stink for 3 or 4 days. So can you talk a little bit about that kind of a flower?
I didn't catch the name. I mean, I could.
I've got the wording in front of me. It's an Amaryllis. Amaryllis. Konjac. Konjac. Up at the university here, I believe it's that tall plant, Larry. You remember the one that smells every year?
Oh.
You remember hearing about that one? It's huge.
Is this, that one that has that long, very stinky, skunky, rotting meat smell?
For about 3 or 4 days. That's the thing. So I bought the bulb that's about a 4-inch. I did my little research before I bought this bulb, and right now it's just sitting on my desk, and supposedly it can grow a couple inches in the next month or so, and then after May you're supposed to put it in like a 5-gallon pail because it gets really tall, and when it flowers out, it'll stink for 3 or 4 days. I was just comment if you'd ever know too much about that kind of a plant.
You know, I just had to look. I featured that on a page in my prior book, the book before this one called The Right Size Flower Garden, and I'm looking at the picture of this thing. It is weird, let's be honest. It's an odd-looking thing. It's definitely a conversation piece, and it will get quite big, and it only blooms for a day. So if you're talking about the same plant, I'm not sure about the species, Titanum, this plant is a really interesting plant that when it finally flowers and opens up, it smells really bad, and then it goes by. So it's a one-day wow thing, may possibly last a couple of days. it's a conversation piece.
Itamarum, I think it is. Isn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking. No, amar. I see it on my book. Amorphophilus or whatever, right?
Oh, thank you for yeah.
It really, really smells. It smells like rotting meat.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Boy.
So it's one of those you might want to move it out the day that it flowers and put it outside.
Yeah. Okay. I'll have to
don't
do that.
Don't have it at weddings and graduation parties. No, not the place today.
Okay. Oh.
Thanks, Arnie. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, we've had several of those bloom on the UW-Madison campus, and it's always, it's actually a little fundraiser for some of the greenhouses here. They might, you know, just charge, they don't, you know, charge a dollar or something for people to come in and look and smell, and it's quite an experience, and people line up to have the chance to experience it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Let's go back. Let's go to the phones to Carol in Crandon, Wisconsin next. Hi, Carol.
Hey, Carol. Hi, Larry. I just want to say I really like listening to your program.
Thank you.
I have a question. Around this time of the year, I'm very fond of hyacinths. So just from a chain store like Walmart, I usually get a few plants. And I've tried to replant them on the side of my house in June, so I've saved the bulbs after, you know, they're through flowering. And I really haven't had much success. What usually will happen either later in the summer or next spring, I'll get some green leaves. I'm lucky if I even get any small blooms, often not. And I wonder if it's worth trying to replant these hyacinths or if there's, should I give up on them or is there something I'm not doing if I try to replant the bulbs?
What do you think, Carrie?
Well, my first question was when you plant them on the side of your house, is that an area that gets a lot of sun?
Yes.
So it's a lot of afternoon sun?
Yes.
All right. Because as you know, with spring blooming bulbs, it's so important that after they flower, that foliage can ripen and capture as much sun as possible, because that's the food manufacturing, if you will, photosynthesis, to put the energy back in the bulb for next year's flower show. And so it really needs a lot of sun, especially hyacinths, where you put them. So assuming that they're in full, a lot of, especially sun in the afternoon, not the weaker sun in the morning. The second thing I would say is a number of these bulbs that have been forced to be available in the stores probably earlier than they normally bloom, sometimes they just don't have the same standing power, the long-lasting power to go into bloom the next year. Some people just, you know, it's a one-time purchase thing, and they just haven't, they don't rebloom as well when they're put in the ground for the second year. But what you could do is, you know, I'm always looking for the deal, is make sure you're planting in a sunny area, and I would supplement, I'd give it some rock phosphate. I don't use bone meal because bone meal can attract critters and all that. I use instead organic rock phosphate, that's phosphorus, like the bone meal, and I would sprinkle some of that in the planting hole when you put it in the ground to supplement the phosphorus going into that bulb for hopefully a better show the following year.
Yeah.
What do you think, Larry?
That sounds like a good plan to me. Yeah. Good luck with that, Carol. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Carrie Ann Mendez, the author of many gardening books. Her latest is called The Budget Wise Gardener, with hundreds of money-saving buying and design tips for planting the best for less. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Glad you joined us today for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Carrie Ann Mendez, author of The Budget-Wise Gardener, she's written many gardening books, but that's her latest. And looking forward to hearing what you have to say. What questions do you have about gardening, maybe about costs or other gardening questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Chief Wolf in Antigo, Wisconsin, we'll go to you next. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. It's Keith Wolf.
Keith.
Yeah, I live in Antigo, and for a number of years now, the United Methodist Church in Antigo has offered land available for a community garden. People can sign up for a plot and pay a small fee just to cover the costs of the water and things. But they've partnered with the UW Extension, who offers free seeds and also some instruction in gardening, especially for people who haven't done it before. And so I just wanted to comment on that, that that's another option for people.
Fantastic. You know, I love to hear this kind of community awareness, people coming together, and to encourage people who have, especially have not gardened before, regardless of the age. I think many schools are getting really great at reaching younger children in gardening, but a lot of us older folks, you know, sometimes we get, you know, we're tentative, right? We're afraid of failure. And so the easier it is to get us involved, and especially the less expensive it is, I just love hearing this kind of outreach to people of all ages to get them excited and involved in gardening. So that's wonderful, Keith.
Yeah, Keith, thank you so much for calling. And that Antigo in the far northern parts of our state.
Yep.
So
We're not ready to start yet.
No.
We might get a couple inches of snow tonight.
Oh, gosh.
There you go. So it's a little later gardening, and plants that are that bloom early and maybe don't last as long as those that are planted in southern Wisconsin, at least in terms of blooms. We have, thanks, Keith. Appreciate it. Don in Madison, your turn. Hi, Don. Thanks for calling.
Don.
Hi, how are you today? I've got a question about fruit trees. Are you, is that in your wheelhouse?
I am not the best person to talk to about fruit trees, but I bet Larry can help.
what's your question?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. So I've been planting apricots in Madison, apricot trees, for about 35 years at different houses I've lived in. Always had great success. And I moved about 15 years ago and planted some apricot trees and had great success. And then I just got some dwarf apricot. But what always happens is the peach borers get to them. And so after about a 10 to 15-year run, they're pretty well shot through with peach borers because I'm not real aggressive trying to fight them. And so then I take them down, put some new ones in, which I did about 6 years ago now. And I also put some peach trees at the same time. The peach trees have been doing amazing, just wonderful. I had some of the best peaches I've ever had last year. They're really coming into their own now. And in 6 years, oh, this will be year six, I have not had a single fruit on the apricot. I've got four of them, four apricot trees, different varieties. Moore Park and a couple other ones. And I don't get it. They're planted, you know, in the same general area. I've had the soil tested. They're planted in the same general area as the peach trees. It's a stone fruit. I don't know what's going on.
That's a good question. And I'm going to defer to our fruit specialist here on campus. You may want to, if you want to shoot me an email, I'll forward that on. But there are stressors that you can put on a tree to make it fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one guy was on the air and he said you ought to take a baseball bat to it and give it a few give it a few whacks and put it under. and other people, it puts it under stress, that's for sure. And other people have a mind to put to literally cut into the tree and put a little stress on it, not all the way around, but put some stress on the tree in that way, and you might get it the fruit. But I tell you what, shoot me an email. I've heard those suggestions as ways to get trees to fruit.
To stress it. All right.
To stress it. But you
think its days are numbered.
you might want to shoot me an email, Don, okay. And I'll forward it on to the proper person.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Literally, somebody called and said they had good luck with that. They took a baseball bat to their fruit tree and got it to fruit.
I have heard people do that, too, this crazy. I've also heard people just do some root pruning to stress it that way. That I think it looks less violent. and just do some, put your spade in the ground around a certain, circumference from the trunk and do some, pruning that way to trigger the onset of new roots that are more effective about drawing nutrients and water and also stresses the plant in some way. So, yeah. Huh.
There we go. Rick in Superior, let's go to you next. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Rick.
Hello. Thanks, Larry, for taking my call.
Sure.
On one of your previous programs, I listened to your guest and yourself talk about sunflowers, and your guest mentioned that the Kong variety, like King Kong variety, was the largest sunflower that was available. I think he said it got to be about 15 feet tall at some point. And I did some checking. I just went to Amazon, and I went to the local stores here. And the only thing I could find, Amazon had nothing of that. They said they never heard of it, but I was able to get some mammoth Russian sunflower variety, but I was wondering if you would know where I might go to get that Kong variety.
Just off the top of my head, Burpee carries it, if I'm not mistaken.
Is that?
I'm Googling it right now. It's called Kong Sunflower.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think Burpee is one of the companies that sells the seeds.
It does. I just came up. So Burpee does sell that seed. Yep.
Burpee.
Kong hybrid.
B-U-R. Yeah, B as in boy, Burpee, like burpa, burp your baby.
Yep.
E-E.
Is that a, do they have a website? Is that what I do?
Yeah, burpee.com probably.
Yep.
Okay.
It's on that. I see it right now. So go to burpee.com and you'll put in sunflower and it comes up, sunflower King Kong variety, the Kong hybrid, and you can buy it right there.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Christina in Glenwood, it is your turn. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Christina.
Hello, thank you. Now, I enjoy using lots of herbs in my cooking, so I want to do a lot of container gardening on my deck, and I'm hoping you can give tips about the types of pots that work best, the material, such as clay or plastic or poly, the shape of the pot, such as long and low or tall, and what other advice you have.
Sure.
Well, I'm going to speak more broadly about it because one of the things I've done, and I've been growing mostly ornamentals, long-lived plants in my containers now and just tucking in annuals. I do some edibles, but I'm doing more for me in the ornamentals. But here's my point. I would be using some of these really incredible newer pots. I don't care if you're growing herbs in them or you're growing annuals or Japanese thread-leaf maples in them. These are lightweight. They are designed to be left out year-round. I'm assuming you're in a colder zone like I am. I'm zone five here in Maine. I still have snow outside I'm looking at. So I don't want to be dragging containers into unheated garages or sheds. So I want a container that is attractive, that can be left out year-round, that is lightweight. And as I mentioned earlier, this new system that is set up for self-watering plants, that can go for weeks with watering, be it herbs or whatever the variety you're using. Not only does it save us time dragging hoses and watering cans around, what I have found as I've been trialing these is they produce better plants because it's more consistent, steady moisture versus overwatering or underwatering when we're watering. And I have just found the plants grown in these containers superior. One of my friends, I don't know if you've had Shauna Coronada on your show, But she uses these, one of the containers she uses and I use is called Crescent Garden True Drop Systems. You can Google this, and she has all her herbs and her ornamentals all in these containers, amazing, and they're going for a month without watering, and they're producing incredible crops between the great potting medium that's used and the more consistent moisture that's provided to the root systems.
Wow. Do you use well water, or do you use, is it water municipal?
For me, we're on municipal water, and you're filling up the tank reservoirs I use municipal water, and if I want to put in some liquid organic fertilizer like Espoma's Grow fertilizer or Neptune's Harvest, you can put a diluted amount in that reservoir tank. I do it at a 50% less, like a very diluted, slow feeding of the root systems with organic liquid fertilizer, but it's in the reservoir system, so I'm not even from the top giving it any organic fertilizer. I've just been amazed at these systems now. It's night and day from what was out there a number of years ago.
Oh, Carrie, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Carrie Ann Mendez, she'll be back. We'll get her back again. She's the author of her latest book is The Budget Wise Gardener, our guest on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.